All right, we got USA men's national team coach Bill Zadek with us. Thanks for joining us, coach.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We basically just asked the questions that we've been, you know, asking ourselves as coaches and stuff. So my first question, sorry, just diving right in, but what kind of metrics is USA Wrestling looking at, or like what is the trend that USA Wrestling is trying to follow as far as in regards to the whole corona quarantine, everything going on?
We are USA Wrestling formed a COVID-19 committee that has some leaders from the medical world, Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tom Price, Dr. Tom Price, former secretary, and then former Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services, John Bartis, and many others, Bernie Feldman, who's Dr. Feldman's been he's a Hall of Fame doctor. He's been involved with USA Wrestling for decades and with UWW. He's officially one of UWW's doctors right now. And several other medical professionals, as well as our leadership. And so they're, you know, kind of doing what everybody else is doing listening to what our governments are saying, our local governments, city, county, state, and then national government, and just watching the CDC and other organizations, medical professionals, and taking recommendations. And so it's, I think that's one of the challenges, and especially for wrestlers, you know, we have this mentality that we'll take on any challenge. But this one, it's not like you can grab a hold of it, right? It's even the president said it's an invisible enemy. And so it's a little bit harder to, go about it, but we have some really smart people in smart places that are keeping a very close eye and then advising us down the line so we can make the best decisions possible. And along with that, we're also, of course, in the Olympic family. We're hearing from the USOPC, and they're doing the same thing and have just come out recently with a return to play protocol, which is you can see that a lot of thought went into it. It's very conservative. It's, Rich Bender and Bruce Bumgarner, myself with the men's freestyle team, we want to lead our athletes with the idea that safety is ultimately first and foremost, not only for our athletes, but also those around us. You know, we have several athletes who are pretty big social media presences and have a larger footprint. So I think it's important for us to be advocating well for our whole society, because people are going to be looking at that, and whatever they're doing, the next generation of athlete or fan or whomever will be watching. So it's really important. But yeah, right now that's kind of, we're taking it day by day and trying to gather the most concrete information, but it's just really fluid at this time.
Yeah. So from a more personal standpoint, whenever you heard that the Olympics were postponed for a year, what was your reaction? I mean, how did you feel, I guess, as the coach?
I guess when the actual announcement came out, we were kind of expecting it because of what had been happening leading up into that point. But if you think back from like 2.5 months ago until now, I apologize for the sounds here.
It's all right. This show is raw. Yeah.
Yeah, we got real life happening in the background. Yeah. So
she's not happy about the Olympics.
No, that's about how I felt. Is about what my daughter was saying. That's a great analogy there. Yeah, but I mean, 2.5 months ago, the beginning of January or the end of January, beginning of February, you just couldn't have imagined it. And it's extremely disappointing because it is what we train for. But even more so than that is the trajectory and the progress that our team was making. The trajectory they were on was very exciting. And I was very hopeful for what was going on, what was going to continue to happen. And so it's extremely disappointing, but Yeah, now, you know, you got to play the cards that are you're dealt. And that's the only thing we can do is we get to make a choice on how we move forward. And that's what we're trying to do is do everything as to the best of our ability, as safely as possible, as well as possible, and maintain focus on excellence in what we're able to do at this time.
Yeah. I've asked a few guys who are training for that level, and Spencer Mango, so not, it can't really be undersold, but in your planning out for the Olympics, you plan kind of a 4-year cycle of training and competing and everything. So yeah. How difficult is it to just add a whole nother year to that for you as a coach?
Yeah, you know, it's difficult, but I think it's going to be more difficult to move forward beyond, you know, I think that's going to be the challenge is instead of having a 4-year cycle, you know, it's easy enough for us to take some downtime and just maintain a fundamental base level of fitness and then ramp back up. You know, I think it's going to be challenging, but I think we'll be able to do it. I think the next challenge will be turning things around. It will only be a 3-year cycle the next time around going into 2024, right? So I think that will be important as well. But right now, you know, the challenge is what do you do with your energy? What do you do with, you know, the first thing that we tried to talk about with our athletes and deal with is just as the Olympic trials was very near. And then of course the Olympic Games, their physical intensity was ramped up pretty high. Along with that, their emotional intensity just automatically climbs. It's just inherent in the part of the process. And so without having those major competitions and results, you know, and feedback, what do you do with all this pent up energy? And so, you know, you just, I think at first it's a little bit like grieving. There's kind of stages of grief, and you're kind of one, you're in denial, and then two, you're in acceptance, and a little bit of a you know, reality check. And then you can start moving forward. And so we've just tried to, on an individual basis, advocate for our athletes to really pay attention to the things that are most important, your family, your faith, and your career second. And in doing that, that will help crystallize your path, right? You know what is most important. You take care of your loved ones. You take care of your family and your faith and your career. You know, in these moments, sometimes your career's leaps in front of those others. But if we always keep it in the right order, it's going to help illuminate our steps and our path forward. And so at this moment, that's kind of where we've focused. And you know, guys are thrifty. They're smart, intelligent people, and they're finding ways to overcome and do it, you know, do the best they can with what is available at this time and keep things, you know, being socially responsible and safe with those around them.
No. Yeah. This is like a coaching nerd question basically, but some of our friends who are coaches, you know, like to see what people would say for this. So for you, you have one of the coolest sounding jobs in wrestling coaching, obviously. So what is a maybe not even right now so much, because I know you're following the same guidelines as everybody else, but what is a, whenever we're not in quarantine, what is a day in the life for you look like in your role?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a little bit different than a college coach, right? We're, you know, coaching at super high level, of course, but I don't have 30 or 40 guys in my room every day. And so we do have a resident program here, and Coach Jackson does a great job running that program. And, you know, Kevin's a really, he's a great human being. He's a great man. Just full of character. And so he leads that program very well. And I try to get to the room as often as I can. But I'm usually up pretty early and make my way to the office in the mornings. And a lot of it is communication and planning, advanced planning. And so, you know, we have a great team of administrators at USA Wrestling, and we're working typically, you know, we submit a high performance plan that's a 4-year plan, And then we submit an annual plan each year of that cycle. So, and we're probably usually 6 to 8 months ahead. You know, what we're working on today is what is happening in 6 or 8 months. And then, you know, sometimes it's a little bit less than that, right? As camps come closer, we're doing a little bit of logistics works and booking flights and making sure everybody has their certifications and all that stuff to come to the training center or whatever, or go on tour if we're going to, you know, an international competition or camp. And so we're staying ahead of that kind of stuff in that regard. And then watching the rest of the world and trying to be intelligent and make adjustments and, you know, communicating on a one-on-one basis with each of our athletes and then also their personal coaches. Okay. So it's a kind of a collaborative effort between everybody, our college coaches, our RTC coaches, our national team members. And when I say national team, you know, we have the official national team, which is like the 30 athletes, right? But I use that in a much broader term as, you know, referring to anybody who's competing on the senior level. I consider national team, right? They're all meaningful, important people to our program. And so just communicating with all those groups and sharing ideas and collaborating on how we can help elevate these individuals to where we all believe they can be. And so
that's kind of it kind of made me think of a question I've been talking to Jesse about lately. But obviously when we can all go to practice and do that stuff, it's kind of easy to say, all right, well, here's what I do for coaching. Here's what I do for coaching to make my kids better. But whenever you can't go to practice, you're kind of forced to develop other skill sets. So it sounds like in your role, obviously everyone knows your great wrestling, you know, background, but you had some other skill sets that helped you into your role. So what are your strengths or what are your skills that you think that helped you in your current role besides obviously your good wrestling background?
Yeah. You know, I don't know, I guess a learning mindset is something that I think is, it keeps me very open-minded and humble. And you know, I like talking about wrestling just like we're doing here. And so, you know, if you were coaching one of the national team members, it would be, I'd be reaching out to you today and saying, hey man, how's things going? And, you know, how's your athlete doing? And just keeping an open dialogue, I think is really important. You're going to have your thoughts. I'll have my thoughts and hopefully we can, you know, they're definitely not going to be the same, right? Even if we have similar philosophies or styles or anything, there's still differences. And usually those are a healthy diversity that are brought to the mix. And so I think that's what I try to do. And I think that's maybe one of my better assets, I guess, but I think it's important for anybody in a leadership role to be able to collaborate with those around you well. And yeah, so, and I have great help. I mean, you know, I already mentioned Coach Jackson and alongside is Coach Russell, Joe Russell. You know, he's got a, you know, an incredible wrestling mind, maybe one of the smartest wrestling minds in the world, and seen a ton in his career and has a lot of experience and is a great people person. And so, you know, he does a lot. He's a guy that's just a continuous bridge builder. And so he's a powerful asset for the national team and for our athletes. Yeah. And so,
sounds like you guys are kind of like the conduit. You bring people together and pass along ideas. And so that kind of leads me to my next question I was going to ask you. So, is it, you know, everyone knows about the Burroughs. This is more of a wrestling question. Everyone knows, you know, the big names. And you're in touch with all those people, but you're also in touch with the up-and-comers and the people that are emerging on the scene. And now, given another year of training, who are some up-and-comers that maybe people, they don't come to their mind right away when they're thinking, you know, Olympic contenders, but they're in another year, they could be.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, you know, historically what you see is you see guys that are, you know, national team members and the guys that come in, the new faces are younger guys that they finally hit that kind of maturity or whatever that is, right? Maybe it's emotional maturity or physical maturity. And all of a sudden, you know, they're pretty good performers and you can watch them come along and then all of a sudden they make a huge jump. And that's really what I would expect to see, you know, moving forward and having a lot of experience on the developmental side of things. I saw that pretty frequently. And that's a really, you know, it's a really great job. I love doing that job. And it's a really rewarding position. It's really dynamic because of that, because everybody, they mature physically, they mature emotionally at different rates. And sometimes, you know, there's a guy that's just been here for a long, long time and all of a sudden just woof, he just jumps. And it's, you know, because of different variables, right? Different genetics, different information or different coaching environment or athlete, you know, training partners. And so, this year, I think it, you know, we obviously have a very strong team and a very strong nucleus of athletes, and we're funneling these 10 weight classes that are just chock full of really amazing competitors into 6. And so it's going to be super competitive. In a lot of cases, I don't often feel surprised by results in wrestling anymore. And maybe it's because I've been around in a lot of international wrestling and seen a lot. And so you just, even when you think, you know, like, well, this is, you know, this guy is the favorite, you just seen too many examples where for whatever reason, he has a bad day. And with regard to this team at this particular time, we have a ton of really high level guys, and the margin is so narrow that, I mean, it honestly, and there are 2 or 3 or 4, maybe more people at a weight that are all right there. And it just wouldn't shock me, you know. And 2016 is a prime example, right? We had two guys who were seated 9th in the trials make the team, and both wrestled for a medal, right? Frank Molinaro was seated 9 and came through and makes the team and was probably 2 seconds away from winning the bronze and beat Chamizo. And then Jaden Cox also in the same boat, right? And basically, it was Jaden's first freestyle tournament in about 4 years, I think. He wrestled Fargo, and then I think he wrestled at the University Nationals once in college in between there, but at a meaningful level. But both of them were high level competitors, right? They're before that, it wasn't like, you know, they came out of nowhere. They were, you know, NCAA champions and real high level competitors. And so, it'll be interesting to see who does emerge in that regard next year. But the good thing is, it's going to be very fascinating for our fans and for all of us to watch. And I think whomever does emerge, because of the quality of the depth of our team right now, you know, it's going to bode well for whoever becomes our Olympian and represents USA in Tokyo.
Yeah, for sure. I just started thinking about guys in my head while you were talking there. But like, you know, people kind of forget whenever guys wrestle in college, they kind of forget that they wrestled freestyle before, or they were really good at it. But like, everyone knows Spencer Lee now for wrestling for Iowa, but dude can freestyle too. Always
Spencer's
good.
Yeah, it's three-time age group world champ, and he's no slouch.
Yeah, he was in the developmental system with you and everything coming up.
I had him on, you know, teams early on, and have worked with him for a long time. And he's a great kid, and he's smart, super intelligent wrestler and human, and got a great wrestling IQ. But that's a loaded weight, right? I mean,
right.
My golly, you got Thomas Gilman, who's looked amazing this year, and Dayton Fix and Spencer and Seth Gross and these other guys. I mean, you know, Joe Colon probably moving into that weight. I mean, it's just like, and then you got a host of others, NCAA champions. And I mean, you know, Darian Cruz is a kid that just continues to impress me, and he's just getting better and better. And he's a phenomenal athlete and a great kid. And there's a lot of people. Nico Megalutis, you know, depending on his health, this postponement is a situation that, you know, Nico's a kid, it might have helped, right? Because he got injured and then got re-injured right before the trials. He kind of made an announcement. Well, how does this help him, you know, recover and add that to the mix? I mean, so you think about that, right? And there's several others that we're not mentioning. You put all those people into one trials procedure, and then who comes out of that? It's like, we're going to feel good about that person. We're going to feel good that this person is tested by fire and is sharpened by iron and is going to be really ready to rock and roll.
And the whole element that you brought up earlier, which is the fewer weight classes. So, I mean, people who matchups you may not even be able to imagine what they look like could be happening, and maybe someone going up a weight, maybe that makes them really tough. You know, like we talked to Kyvan one day and was like, you know, Kyle Snyder's the man, obviously, but people have always been like, you know, Kyvan and Kyle Snyder up there. Now Jaden's going up there. I mean, upper weights are going to be tough. Everything, it's going to be a lot of dynamics.
All the way through, right? We're fortunate in the United States, and you know, people are working really hard, and there's a lot of good athletes, and there's a lot of smart coaches around, and we're all benefiting from that. And so, yeah.
You kind of hit this earlier, actually, with talking about Joe Russell, but me and him are, you know, we like to kind of like dive deep into coaching, and everyone knows, you know, a lot of the big names in coaching. Who are some of the people maybe that people don't know of, or kind of like behind the scenes guys people don't think of right off the bat, who are doing a really good job preparing guys for the international level of wrestling?
Yeah. Man, there's a lot of people that, you know, in our RTCs and our colleges that work really hard, that are just, there's a lot of intellect out there, right? There's a lot of experience in that community, cumulative knowledge is, you know, Joe to me is one of the smartest wrestling minds in the world. And I said it before, but, and definitely underrated as a coach, you know, and probably because he's such a humble human being. And you know, his story's gotten out there a little bit. Flo did a little thing, but you could really do a lot more investigation of Joe Russell, and from his upbringing and what has shaped his outlook on life, but then also as he applies that to the sport of wrestling. And he's just a super passionate individual. He cares about people. He loves wrestling he's a voracious reader, and just, he's always hungry for knowledge and information. And, you know, with his story, to Jay's credit, when Joe was in the motorcycle accident, you know, Jay, the story that I heard, you know, I looked up to Joe as a young man, right? So I knew him, I've known him since I was, very young. And so I feel very fortunate and blessed that I get to go to work and talk with him every day. And this is, you know, may not be exactly true, but this is the truth that I know of, that Jay had already offered him the scholarship, and that after the accident probably knew that he might not wrestle, but he had just taken over at Minnesota and is trying to build this school into a powerhouse, and tells him, you know, Joe, just, it will be worth it just to have your mind in our wrestling room to help build the culture. And then, you know, Joe goes on to compete and wrestle, and, you know, didn't realize his competitive goals, but his mind was so sharp and became an integral part of the Minnesota wrestling program, right? It's synonymous with it being a powerhouse, and Jay's right hand man for, you know, 20 plus years, and won 3 national titles there. And so, yeah, he's pretty incredible individual.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of coaches, man. You know, I mean, you look at Penn State, and obviously KL does a great job, and he's a, you know, capitalized on a great ideology and develops guys well. But, you know, Casey Cunningham's a guy that does a lot of work in that program, and Kale's brother Cody does a lot of work in that program, and you know, the other coaches that they have, Jake Varner, you know, Jake's kind of a soft-spoken guy and doesn't say a lot, but he's really sharp. I loved working with Jake when he was an athlete, and I was an assistant, and I enjoy working with him now as coaches. And there's just a lot of them. You know, Coach Goodale at Rutgers is doing great things, and he brings in Donnie Pritzloff, and what a great fit that has been for that program. And Donnie is, you know, another one of those names that's out there. You know, Brian Snyder has had a huge impact on Jordan and James Green, and does amazing things at Nebraska. And yeah, that's a dangerous list to start talking about those things, because you're afraid you're going to leave somebody out.
Right? Yeah. And
there's just too many of them to name, right? But there's a lot of really great coaches out there.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, I want to give you a chance to talk about, you know, it doesn't have to be your wrestling experience, but maybe something, you know, a little bit more fun. But you obviously have gotten to travel a lot as a coach and as an athlete all over the world. So of the places you've been, what are a couple of places that have stood out to you? What are some of your favorite places you've been or favorite experiences you've had?
Wow. Man, that's I don't know if I had thought deep enough for this question. Here's what I'm going to tell you is, first is, it's been an amazing life experience to do what I've done, and wrestling has been so good to me. Oh, 6-8 years ago, I was an assistant, and USA Wrestling did a social media campaign where they were trying to get everybody engaged on Facebook, and they asked us to count how many countries you've been to and list them out. And it was like 30. No, it was 28. It's 28, and I think I, you know, that was 8 years ago, right? So I've added several since then, and you know, I grew up in a pretty, you know, my hometown, Great Falls, is 60,000 people, but when you get outside of Great Falls, it's pretty, you know, it's not like a rural community like the Midwest, where there's a farmhouse every mile square, right? And so, just the ability to travel and see the world and compete at a high level as a competitor and compete at a high level as a coach, as you know, the whole thing, you know, meeting the people that I've met, meeting you guys, talking with you guys about wrestling, and you know, 20 years ago, who would have thought we would talk on Zoom and have a podcast, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a great uncle that the last 4 years of his life, he lived with my mom and dad. And he passed away in 2008, just about 2 months before his 99th birthday. And he was a fascinating individual. And he used to tell these great stories, and we'd just sit around the dinner table and just pepper him with questions and ask him to tell the same story over 100 times. But I used to just wonder and be amazed at, he was born in 1909, and he lived until, you know, 2008, and the change that he saw in society during his lifetime. And I look, you know, at our lives, right? I mean, the information age and technology, and as fast as it's advancing, what kind of revelations will that be? And, you know, I guess the way it relays back to your question is, I get to see a lot. You know, I've been given a lot of opportunity in life through this sport, meeting people and seeing the world. And so, you know, the high moments of competition are great when you win a world title as an individual, when you win a world title as a team, it takes so much more for that to come together. It's pretty special and amazing moment. And it took a lot of years and a lot of people's dedication and commitment. And so those things are all extremely valuable. I think the relationships are the most important things, or the most, to me, the most rewarding of all of that. And so, yeah.
That's kind of been the fun thing of, sorry to bring it back to us, but we've been doing these Zoom calls. It started off as kind of like, you know, oh, let's just, you know, talk to one of our friends on Zoom. And so we posted it, and people are like, oh, people miss each other, you know, right now. And so we get on Zoom and we talk to people, and it feels like they've, you know, got to relate with each other. So I think that it really has brought back, it's more than just, you know, getting in a wrestling room and scrapping it up, even though that's the fun parts. It's the relationship part for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. And hopefully that's one of the lessons that society learns when coming out of this, is that we don't, we truly value that connection that we've been missing. And honestly, I've talked, like you said, I've talked to a lot of people more on Zoom in the last 8 weeks than I did prior. And hopefully we can carry that forward with us, right? And really understand the value of that community.
Yeah. When we can all go sit back outside together and talk, people, make sure you take advantage of that. So, all right, we'll wrap it up here in a second. I just wanted to ask you this too, and then I'll let Jesse ask you a couple questions. Sorry, I don't try to cut Jesse out, by the way. Like, people are like, we talk about the stuff beforehand, and I ask the questions typically, and he's the audience member.
Just happens naturally.
Yeah, No, if you putting on your coaching hat, say you're going back and you're coaching high school age kids like we do, pretend that we can go to practice and everything right now. What would you tell a high school age kid is the most important things they should work on or develop technically to be ready for freestyle at a high level?
Well, technically it's all out there. I mean, head position. So important in the sport of wrestling. And when, I mean, we focus on it a lot, and it impacts your offense and defense at the same time. We spend a lot of time in control ties, and not just, we work on them offensively, but we work on them counter offensively. And I say that, specifically not defense. Meaning that sometimes if we say, okay, we're going to clear underhooks, we clear them and we develop this very defensive, passive posture about being an underhook instead of counter-offensively. So I'm going to clear it to where I'm turning it back into my offense. And it keeps me thinking forward and proactively. And I think that's growth mindset is, it's not really technical, but there's so many variables and combinations of what can work, right? And it's so dependent on your body type and your stature and your length and leverage and strength and fitness and quickness and all these things that there's a couple of fundamentals about our sport, and mainly they revolve around just general locomotion. How does our body move? How does it move most effectively, most efficiently? The way we're engineered is to be in a vertical orientation. The more we can maintain that vertical orientation, we have more mobility, balance, and power and speed. So we should, if we try to apply those to all technical areas, we're going to be better. And then just be open-minded to what possibilities there are and that can work. And I was, that was turned on for me by coaches that I had, my father, Mark Sprague, Dennis Campbell, Floyd Vaughn. Of course, it continued with Coach Gable and others, and the coaches that had been around, Coach Burnett at the national team, and Coach Jackson was my coach when I was an athlete for a time period too. So, and then just the major areas, finishing is really important. I think we do a lot of drilling in America where you and I are trading off, and I drill three times and you drill three times. And I think a lot of times we get to our feet and stop. And I think that's, we sometimes develop a subconscious habit of not completing a score. And so you do a little bit of that at the beginning of practice as you're warming up and you're getting your body ready for impact. But as soon as you're kind of to that warm point, I really believe strongly that your finish is your turn. And so I shoot, I was a high C guy. So I shoot my high C, change off to a double all the way down, and my leg, knees are together, and I go right in my lace. Or I change off to that double and I got the deep waist and I go right into my gut wrench. And it's the anticipation of the next move and knowing where you're going. Yeah. And that's really important with our finishes. Getting from your knees to your feet is critical. And it's one of the hardest things to do in our sport, right? But we don't often think of it in those terms. We think, oh, I know how to shoot a single leg. I know how to shoot a double leg. But what I have to do is I have to do it on you, and a quality competitor, opponent who has good defense. If you were going to do the same defense that I would teach, how am I going to beat that, right? And so we spent a lot of time working there, you know, from our knees to our feet and all the way to the turn. So those transitions.
That does seem to be, whenever we go from coaching high school to freestyle season, the biggest thing that is the gap, I guess, from folk style to freestyle sometimes is finishing hard, finishing clean, because there's a lot of little ways to get around it in folk style that you can't in freestyle. So,
and honestly, it's just as important in folk style, but because folk style doesn't have exposure from the feet, you get away with it a little bit more, but it's still, from an offensive standpoint, when you look at like NCAA tournament where you have, you know, the first couple rounds where you have an athlete who is maybe a higher, you have a greater disparity in rank, or, you know, not that it's rank, but it's skill level, right? In the first couple rounds is where that tends to happen more frequently. It's really obvious. Mm-hmm. Probably a lot of people don't see it because it's it's a blowout, right? He pinned them or he tacked them or they were off the mat quick. But I look at the little things that are making the difference. And that thing is really important in folk style too. But sometimes you hit me with a double leg. In freestyle, I have to learn how to stuff your head, sprawl, get my feet back, circle back into the mat. Otherwise, you run me out of bounds and you still score points. Folk style, you'll come up and I can roll across my back and spaghetti wrestle and save the position. And so if you have better technique on your finishing, it really doesn't allow me to do that. So
Jesse, you got some questions you thought of?
Yeah, I should have jumped in a while ago because it would have related a little bit more and flowed a little bit better. But we were talking about how we're paring down from 10 weight classes to 6 and how that increases the depth. And then you also have maybe some guys that are going to like come out of nowhere a little bit. And I just wanted to kind of pick your brain because you've been there as an athlete and you've been there as an individual coach, I think, for your brother, right? How do you deal with that when, you know, that type of thing happens, the depth kind of increases, or maybe a kid comes out of nowhere? How do you deal with that as an athlete mentally and in your preparedness? And then same thing as a coach, because I think for you, it was like Jamil Kelly kind of was the guy that came out of nowhere, right? Yeah. And he had never been an All-American or anything. And then all of a sudden, boom, here's this guy that's having success. So how did you approach that as an athlete, and how did you approach that as a coach?
Yeah, that's a great question. And honestly, I think you focus on the things that you know are going to impact you the most, right? In offensively, defensively, whatever it may be, you know, I kind of we tend, and there's a lot of philosophy, and I agree with most of it, that we tend to work on our assets 80 or 90% of the time, and our liabilities maybe 10 to 15 or 20%, given, you know, whatever time of the year you're in. But I think that's really how I approached it as an individual, is I knew what I needed to do. And in a lot of cases, you find that if you're doing what you're in control of and what you can influence, if I'm doing those to the highest level of my ability, the less it matters what my opponent does. And so, that's the way I approached it as an athlete. That's the way I approach it now as a coach. Everyone has different metrics, right? Everyone has a little bit different makeup and a little bit different style or brand of competition. And we're analyzing those and where their strengths are and where their potential, if I was coaching against that person, where their potential weaknesses are, and how do we shore those up and, you know, fix those while we continue to accentuate and grow their assets. And so, that's another benefit to having a great coaching staff and collaborating with personal coaches, as well as, you know, Joe Russell and Kevin Jackson. Everyone brings a little bit different perspective. We all understand the basics, right? We all know the single leg. We all know the high crotch. We all know the leg lace and the gut wrench, whatever it may be, but bring a unique perspective. And then, from a coaching standpoint, we can analyze that particular area or whatever it may be for that individual. And so, yeah, Jamil, Jamil's per your other question, one of those great coaches. Jamil's one of those great coaches. Mm-hmm. Really good in the room. He's really analytical. And yeah, you know, even though he and I competed, you know, I because of that, I have a ton of respect for him, ton of respect for what he did. You know, he went and won the Olympic silver medal. He didn't really come out of nowhere. We, you know, anybody that was wrestling at 65 kilo or 66 right. kilo at the time knew he was pretty salty. And he put it together, did a great job. But, yeah, I think it's, you know, understanding where your strengths are and continuing to enhance those while you're shoring up any kind of liabilities that are out there, and then, you know, applying that to the individual and to the program.
That's great. Yeah, I like that a lot, because I think that's a debate that we always have when you get to that district tournament or state tournament time, and you know you're going to have those tough matchups. Like, okay, what do we need to focus on and make sure that you're getting in your athlete's head correctly, you know?
Yeah.
And making sure that you're getting them ready to go in the right way.
You bring up a good point, too, is knowing those things and having, like, I don't really come up with execution plans. Like, this is how you're going to wrestle, you know, right down to the T, right? I think we know who and what we are, and we work as hard as we can, because that just cements confidence in what we're about to do. And then I think another thing that's really important with regard to what the comment you just made was, is don't worry about it, right? A lot of times we invite pressure and, you know, competition anxiety or whatever you want to call it, because we're focused on externals, you know, and focused on who that guy is and what that guy did. Or we try to apply that transitive property to our sport. Well, he beat him, you know, I beat him by 4 and he beat him by 7. That doesn't, you know, that doesn't work that way, right? It doesn't, because he has different geometry than I do. He's taller and leaner and I'm shorter and stockier, whatever, right? And those style matchups. And so, you know, or you're thinking about, well, it's the state tournament finals and there's all these people and my family's here. Don't worry about those things. It's no different than the very first match that you ever wrestled in your life. That first match was the most important one you ever wrestled at that point. Just go out and wrestle. Look at the guys, you know, stare at his midsection or his hips and try to score the next point and just solve that problem first and then do it again and just keep reapplying that and make adjustments. And so, but yeah, that point you made, I think is really powerful. I think it's really important for athletes to understand, is like, you know, just focus on myself. And if I'm doing that to the highest level of my ability, the less anything that you might be doing to me matters.
That's good. Jesse, you got any more?
No, I think we're ready for the last question we usually end with.
Go ahead. He's got too many experiences for this. Yeah.
I know. It's probably going to be really hard for you, but we always ask anybody if they have like a really unique wrestling story that sticks out to them in their experience. Could be anything. Could be weird, funny, or just unique, or just a really great experience that sticks out to you.
Holy moly. Yeah, man, if I'd have been a little bit prepared, I could have thought there's so many, right? A lifetime.
Well, I'll give you an example, maybe just to get your – so the other day we talked with Clarissa Chun, and she just told us about this time that they went to a sauna in Russia, and she was like, yeah, it was like straight up mafia style, like you're going down basements, there's like cherry wood on the walls, and, you know, so that was just kind of a cool story because it just brings something out that's different, you know?
Yeah, well, I've been in situations like that too, you know, over there. It's a little different society, different cultural beliefs. Yeah, so this is kind of a funny one. It's kind of similar to that. And so, I was over in, let's see, it was a long trip, very long trip. It was like 17 or 21 days. And we were with a big group, of course, national team. We were in Ukraine and Russia. And we went two different places in Russia. And my brother was on the trip. And maybe I remember it a lot because of all the trips and all the travel that we've been on, it's the only tour that we ever went on together was that tour, other than when we were on the world team together. And, you know, but the only one where we were competing, right, outside of the world championship. So anyways, we had been training there for a number of days, and these old guys come in, and they use the sauna, right? These old coaches, retired coaches or retired wrestlers, they come in and sit in the sauna every day. And they imbibe a little bit, you know, so they sit in the sauna and they're having a drink or two and they're watching, you know, us train. And one of the guys comes up to me, and he was a retired coach in Ukraine. And he says, Zadik, I like you, Zadik, good technique, not normal American, only strong, but you have technique. So I kind of, I was like, yeah, thanks. You know, took that as a compliment. And so he says to me a couple of days later, he's like, Zadik, we are brothers, wrestling brothers. Yes. I said, yeah, thanks. Appreciate it. He says, okay, after tournament, after competition, you come, we have sauna and vodka. And I'm like, no, thank you. You know, I got to compete the next day, and I don't drink anyways. He said, no drinking, only vodka. So that was pretty funny.
Hey, that's a great impression, by the way.
Yeah.
I've been there enough to know.
You could do movies. Kind of, you could do cartoons.
Statement, right? Like, he didn't even think vodka was drinking. It was
right. That's awesome.
I mean, if you drink it in the sauna, I guess you're just going to sweat it out anyway. So.
Yeah, I think that's kind of their philosophy anyways. I don't know how true it is, but.
All right, Coach. Well, we really do appreciate you talking to us, taking time for us, and you. I hope you guys stay healthy, and, you know, your kid stays clean and everything else there during quarantine.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. I appreciate what you guys are doing to promote our sport and give people some content, especially during this time. But yeah, keep up the good work and keep healthy and safe. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot, Coach. We'll talk to you later. All right.
Yep. Take care, guys.
All right.